You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily investigative news magazine. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Have you heard? Christopher Hitchens, former Nation columnist, will be the keynote speaker at the Mario Savio Free Speech Awards at UC Berkeley tomorrow night. Hitchens has now become one of the strongest supporters of U.S. plans to attack Iraq. Many progressives and people on the left are horrified by Hitchens' decision to support the war, and many are also troubled that he has been invited to be the speaker at the Mario Savio Awards. Among the most outspoken critic of this action is Alexander Colburn. Colburn is the Counterpunch editor and Nation columnist. We spoke to him earlier today, and we began by asking Colburn if he was surprised to hear Hitchens had come out as a warrior for the bombing of Iraq.
Not really. He actually was against the 91 Gulf War, a fact I think which he perhaps doesn't want remembered too much. But since then, he's been pretty much in favor of every U.S., then very small, that is after it, U.K. imperial expedition of revenge or intervention.
There's a lot being said here at KPFA. There's an announcement running on the air. We warmly welcome Christopher Hitchens, and we urge people to come and listen to him speak.
Who's warmly welcoming him?
Some version of KPFA is warmly welcoming him.
Really? It's the official position of KPFA to welcome this eager proponent of bombing children in Iraq to a speech somehow honoring the memory of one of the most best-known anti-war people of the 20th century?
Well, they are supporting his appearance at the Mario Savio Awards.
Why? Must be demented. This is what KPFA has come to. How disgusting. Well, I might say that there's an effort to turn this into a free speech issue, which it's not. It's a matter of politics. I met Lynn Hollander Savio, I guess Savio's widow, actually at a private dinner up here in Petrolia back in February, actually at the house of my friend Joe Paff and Karen Paff, who Joe was a member of Slate and the early FSM. And we were talking about this and that, and then she said she had this Savio event, and then she said she had a speaker, and I said, who's that? And she said, Christopher Hitchens. And I was so astounded. Actually, I was brusque. I said, this is absolutely demented. Why would you, on earth would you want a fellow who was vigorously in favor of U.S. imperial expeditions? I mean, he's got a perfect right to say what he wants, where he wants, but why would you want to invite him? And she didn't have anything particularly illuminating to say. She seemed a bit surprised. And then I got the press release announcing this event, you know what, for a few weeks ago, and I wrote her an email. And I said, you know, I'm saddened to see, I'm disgusted to see that you're pursuing this course. And actually, she said that they were having Adam Hochschild. And I got it wrong. I thought they'd said Todd Gitlin, because the two are virtually indistinguishable in my mind. And then I corrected that to this event. And then she wrote back, couching it as if it were free speech. It was an issue of free speech. Well, I'm totally in favor of free speech. And Christopher Hitchens has an enormous number of venues easily available to him, starting with Vanity Fair and going on to, you know, now he's writing columns, I think, for Slate. He's the modern Slate, not the old Slate. He's got, everywhere to write. And Hochschild himself isn't exactly devoid of positions, but it was a political decision to invite him to the Savio thing. And I think in no way of Christopher Hitchens' rights to speak be introduced. He's got probably more availability and platforms than almost any other journalist in the country. I wrote a thing in Counterpunch with the newsletter, which is coming out, and I said it's as though, you know, there was a conference honoring the memory of Martin Luther King, and the keynote speaker was a guy from the FBI who said that J. Edgar Hoover did the right thing to Martin Luther King. Would that have been appropriate? No, it was absolutely ludicrous.
That's the voice of Alexander Colburn. He is the editor with Jeffrey St. Clair of Counterpunch, the internet magazine. You can also get it in hard copy. We're talking about Christopher Hitchens, the former columnist for The Nation magazine. I guess he's left that column because he has all those other venues that he can express himself in. Hitchens has said, Alex, that he cannot believe that lefties like you and me are busy standing up and supporting people like Saddam Hussein, mass murderers, killers, Slobodan Milosevic, and that we've lost our minds and our direction.
Well, this is a strategy not just of Hitchens, or he's done it more vulgarly and more brazenly than most, but there's been quite a little campaign going on, which I'm sure you've noticed, by Hitchens, by Todd Gitlin, by David Corn, and by Mark Cooper, to name four, all of them in some way or another, except for Gitlin, associated with The Nation magazine, I'm sorry to say. who have been saying that in the demonstrations in Washington, D.C. and in the Bay Area not so long ago, which were attended, what, collectively by, I don't know, 150,000 people, those people were being led by the nose by the Workers' World Party, by Ramsey Clark, and by the IAC, the International Action Center. David Corn wrote the most disgusting piece of all, which was like an FBI field report to Hoover in the middle 50s. This is a guy, by the way, Corn has written a rather admiring book about one of the most horrible CIA officers of the recent past, which was Ted Shackley, who was in charge of the Phoenix program and then in charge of the CIA Western Hemisphere Division at the time Allende was overthrown. You know, so his credentials aren't exactly fragrant. And here he is presuming to lecture people who've turned out against a punitive martial expedition, which will certainly, I don't imagine if they get to it, it'll last very long, but will certainly, you know, materially vastly increase the direct sufferings of many, many people, many of them children. And so what do they say? Thinking about this, you know, if you look at the early, I've been writing a bit about it too in Counterpunch, if you look at the early 60s, you know, the early demonstrations against the Vietnam War were organized on the East Coast by the Maoists and on the West Coast by the SWP, the Socialist Workers' Party. Now, I'm sure that people like Hitchens, like Korn, at that time were saying, you know, this is all controlled by the communists, and if you so much as raise a voice against the war, you're actually, you know, being a friend of Joe Stalin, a friend of Khrushchev, a friend of, you know, the jackboot of communism. Those people weren't in the least doing that. And that, of course, Harrington, Michael Harrington, and the old left in the early 60s, like Irving Howe, it's exactly what they did say. And they red-baited the anti-war forces. Well, of course, people who went to those early demonstrations and gradually increased opposition to the war and to a level where it became a major force in society, did they emerge from these demonstrations as Maoists or as members of the SWP? Of course they didn't. Very often it is people in small groups who stay up late at night, lick envelopes, call up, make sure the buses are going to go, who do the hard work of organizing. And for Christopher Hitchens to turn around and say someone who's gone to a demonstration in the Bay Area or in Washington is a cat's paw of Saddam Hussein is absolutely repulsive. It's the kind of bullying terror journalism that he's been indulging in for many years.
Well, Alex, I guess one of the problems I have with Hitchens' bomb Iraq policy, beyond the fact of suffering that will happen on the ground there, is that it opens the door for a more crushing blow to Palestinians. It gives a cover for Ariel Sharon and the Israelis to do whatever the hell they want. And you would think that somebody like Christopher Hitchens, who has supported in some way Palestinian liberation, would understand that.
Well, I mean, his record on the Palestinians generally has been not bad, quite good, actually, and in contradistinction to many of his other positions. I haven't noticed him plowing that furrow so often, and now that he's not got the nation to do it in, I don't think he'll be writing long articles in Vanity Fair about Palestinian rights. I really don't. But, of course, you're right. The fear is that an onslaught on Iraq, which is a scenario, you know, that I've been reading some material about, you know, the thinking coming out of think tanks in Israel, even out of people, you know, around Sharon. This whole scenario of a preemptive onslaught on Saddam Hussein has been around a while, with some of the most toxic members of the high, sort of high think tank military diplomatic elites in the U.S. and in Israel, both, you know, gnawing at that bone since the late 90s. And, yes, one's every right to feel worried. And the present sufferings and persecution of the Palestinians are atrocious enough. And if under the one of the scenarios is, of course, that in an attack on Iraq, well, maybe some missile, they'll say that Saddam Hussein has fired at Israel, or they'll invent one that he fired at Israel, or maybe he will try and fire it at Israel. This will provoke something on the ground that will allow some say the beginning of a wholesale eviction of Palestinians inside Israel and so forth. I mean, it's possible. It's still fairly hard to imagine that people in the numbers required would be driven from their homes. God knows how awful enough things have been happening to the Palestinians without much of a bleat of protest, and indeed with the absolute, you know, wholehearted support of almost everybody in the U.S. Congress, that anything is possible.
Alex, Christopher Hitchens is doing something that we've seen oftentimes in recent years, and that's a leftist doing a quick flip and making a career on it. It seems like he is doing quite well by flip-flopping.
You know what, when I was asked, when he left the nation, which he did suddenly without a word of thanks to his readers who, you know, enthusiastically followed him over the years, and you hadn't really noticed, but in many ways Christopher Hitchens became a fairly right-wing guy and stated so. I will give him that. if you go and look at articles in Reason magazine, he said, I'm really no longer on the left in many areas. He applauded Margaret Thatcher. I used to get a lot of mail when I wrote critically about Hitchens, saying, oh, there you are again, just internecine struggling in the left. And I'd write back to them, I'd saying, you're deluded. You believe in some kind of Dorian Gray figure, but, you know, the portrait in the attic is rotting and looking horrible. And I'd send them, you know, examples of what he's actually said, starting with, you know, not being distressed about the extinction of indigenous peoples and, you know, very often with the agency, of course, of white, you know, first world people. And I mean, a position after a position, which is truly repulsive, saying that Thatcher was the real radical in England and so on. And I'd send them that, not to mention, you know, his record as a snitch in you know, basically trying to finish off the man he proclaimed to be his dearest friend, Sidney Blumenthal, who worked for the Clinton administration. I'd say all that, and they couldn't take it in. I think people are slow to see that people have changed. And then I said, you know, someone asked me, and I said, he's just another middle-aged talker of the right. And I think we're going to start on Counterpunch, a jam-pot file, just another middle-aged talker of the right, with a little R for right, registered sign. And the jam-pot file will chronicle yet another person, as you say, who finds that the grass outside the fence can be very agreeable. It'd be nice little... I see that he's also going to become the I.F. Stone professor at the Berkeley School of Journalism. I mean, poor old Izzy Stone. There's another one whose memory will be defiled by this war ranter. Life as a guy who's left the left is going to be quite agreeable. There'll never be any shortage of grant money. There'll never be any shortage of platforms like David Horowitz got. And now that Christopher Hitchens... Well, Horowitz is sort of almost too cranky for the mainstream these days. He just has to make an eruption about once a year so he can get his grant money from some lunatic right-wing billionaire. Hitchens, you know, still commands, I think, the attention of sort of middle levels of society. He'll get his I.F. Stone chair. He'll get all sorts of chairs. He'll have a happy life. No question about it.
Alice, before we let you go, I want to turn your attention back to Iraq. We're now seeing reports coming out of the press in Britain and Africa that the United States has started a disinformation campaign against Hans Blix, against the chief weapons inspector in Iraq. And meanwhile, while he was there to greet him on the first day, there were bombings in the so-called no-fly zone. Do you think there's any hope to these inspections, or is war a foregone conclusion here?
The opportunities for manipulation and misrepresentation are so great. And the ease with which Bush can simply say we no longer have confidence. Remember, he said, after all, before the UN Security Council vote, he said, look, if it votes in favor of what we want to do, that's fine. But if it doesn't vote in favor of it, that's fine, too, because we'll go ahead and do it anyway. Now that they've got that vote, despite all the little protective language that the French and the Russians put into it about, you know, consultation and all the rest of it, it won't take much to say that's it. Saddam Hussein is not acting in good faith. He failed to agree to a full personal cavity search to see whether he was concealing nuclear weapons of mass destruction about his person, whatever it might be, and then they'll let fly. So, yeah, it'd be really, really hard. If they really are absolutely dead set, they'll find the pretext.
And do you believe, we've done some extensive reporting, special reporting on the idea of going in and splitting Iraq, even splitting Saudi Arabia, redesigning the map of that region. Do you have any belief in that kind of plan?
Oh, I think at their outer level, they have an absolute plan. You know, these people around Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz, they were formulating all this stuff in the late 90s. I think they absolutely do have a vision of a reconstituted Middle East. I mean, that's the only thing that holds them back, whether they feel the whole thing will hold up, you know. And now, here's Christopher Hitchens saying that the, you know, people like you and me and anti-war crowd are betraying the Kurds. Well, I wouldn't give much for the Kurds. The Kurds have got it now just about as good as they'll ever get it, frankly, as far as I can see. I'd like to be, and once they have the situation reordered to their liking, do they actually want to see a Kurdistan emerge? Are they really going to say that to Turkey? Of course they're not. The idea that an intervention would necessarily be very good for the Kurds, I think, is not something that many Kurds entertain. I mean, the main person whom Hitchens proclaims his loyalty to is Shalabi, who has been going around the country in the company of propagandists for Israel. I mean, the credibility of Shalabi inside Iraq in any post-Saddam Hussein regime is virtually zero. Of course, there will be enormous difficulties. What are they going to do about the Shia in the south? Or the Shia who they don't want them, obviously, to become allied with Iran. Do they want an Iranian protectorate in central southern Iraq? The Kurds are huge, huge problems, which must make even these demented empire builders pause, if only for a moment.
All right. Well, we have been speaking with Alexander Coburn. He is the editor, along with Jeffrey St. Clair, of Counterpunch. You can reach them at www.counterpunch.org. You can check out an interesting article by Jack McCarthy called Hitchens, Snitch Envy. And you can find out information that you will not get anywhere else. Alex also does a column for The Nation magazine. He still does the column.
I'd like to pitch one. There's one great article we published recently on that website by Matthew Yeomans, Y-E-O-M-A-N-S, who's at Cal, called The End of the Two-State Solution, which is one of the best things on Palestine I've read in a very long time.
You want to sum it up?
He just said, you know, look, is it really this whole idea of the two-state solution? Is really, given the erosions of what might be a Palestinian state by the settlers, the relentless nibbling away diplomatically and substantively on the ground, has gone so far that maybe the two-state solution doesn't exist anymore, and we should return to the idea of, you know, a democratic, secular, unified state accommodating the rights of both Israeli Jews and Israeli-Palestinians.
Well, that would be an interesting
It's
development.
A very exciting, well-written, and forcefully argued article. I'd really very strongly go to the Counterpunch homepage, look for search, you'll get a little, put in Yeomans, Y-E-O-M-A-N-S, up there, and hit return, and it's a good read.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for being with us on Flashpoints.
Thanks, Dennis.